The Final Play Podcast welcomes you to the following presentation of the NFL.
Behold the King. The King of Kings. On your knees, dog.
Now, if we're talking about NBA, we could probably say, you know, King James, but since we are doing the NFL, all hail King Henry.
All hail King Henry.
Bow down to King. Is there anything that man can't do?
We probably need a separate pod to a deep dive just on insanely what he's doing this season, but it's nothing he can't do. I'll rip through the scores. We're week 7 of the NFL. Hello, everybody. Starting with the Friday game, it was the Browns beating the Broncos, third string back in Case Keenum beating the Broncos 17-14. The Packers beating the Washington Football Team 24-10. The Titans beating the Chiefs, you know, speaking of King Henry, 27-3. Falcons beating the Dolphins 30-28. The Pats putting 50 on the hapless Jets, 54-13. The Giants beating Panthers. I'm not sure what's going on.
Should have laughed at the Jets, but oh, man.
No, we can. 25-3. The Bengals, you know, this is the game I want to talk about a lot more. The Bengals beating the Ravens, 41-17. The Raiders beating the Eagles, 33-22. The Raiders just haven't lost since Gruden's gone, which is interesting. The Rams.
So it's the same old deal, though. Like, are the Raiders for real? Like, I don't know what to make. I don't know what to make of them.
It's possible. The Rams, beating the Lions 28-19. It was obviously first game for both teams against their old teams. Speaking of Stafford and Goff, so. And Lions looked good at the start, you know, but then Rams did what Rams can do in that kind of game. The Cardinals beat the Texans 31-5. The Bucks just flexed muscles over the Chicago Bears 38-3, literally. The Colts, you know, you're speaking of frisky teams like you sort of said about the Raiders, beat the 49ers 30-18 in rain-soaked weather.
Driving rain. Apparently, that was the first time that Jimmy G has ever worn gloves.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I just remember him saying that throughout the No, it didn't help. But and whether or not that was just a comfort thing, or yeah, it was very very strange to yeah he's quarterbacked. You know, in New England before, where it probably gets quite chilly, but he said that's the first time he's ever worn. I think, well, not so much. He's probably a lot of them wear gloves on their non-throwing hand, but yeah. He had gloves on both hands.
And the final game was your Saints, and this was a terrible game. I'm sorry, but the Saints did sneak away with the win, beating the Seahawks 13-10. Obviously, a little bit less games because the bye week. For the following teams, the Bills, the Cowboys, the Vikings, the Steelers, the Chargers, and the Jaguars. So, look, first game, right up the top, the Friday game. Case Keenum starting quarterback and third string Dearness Johnson beating the Broncos. It's just, I mean, you really wouldn't write about it, but that's just how Broncos are playing.
This game was, it was basically all about Dearness Johnson getting his first NFL start, and he just assumed the role of Nick Chubb and was seamless.
He was seamless. They had such a good offensive, like, and that's probably something we don't talk about that much with the Browns, considering, well, you know, Baker sneaks by these wins, and I wonder why, because he's got a great offensive line. Like, that offensive line just opened so many holes for Dearness Johnson. You could just see it. It was a lot of parting of the Red Sea. He was also great.
They moved, and Cleveland moved the ball really well, too, in that first half more than anything else. And Case Keenum sort of looked, I guess, like, like Case Keenum does. Like, he's a backup there for a reason, but, you know, he's been the starter on multiple teams before. You know, he's led the Vikings to an NFC Championship game. So it's not as if we're at the peak of his powers. He can be an extremely serviceable quarterback, and that's all they needed him to be in this game.
Look, you said it before this game. You said one Austin Hooper probably could need to sort of stand up in this game, and you know, I guess there wasn't a lot of receptions going on in terms of the Broncos and Browns, in terms of the Broncos and the Browns. But Austin Hooper did lead them for two receptions for 42 yards. The other two wide receivers, I mean, I know, I think Odell did go off again. What do you think? Like, is this team okay enough to make a deep playoff run? I just don't know. They're 4-3, so they're still there, is what I'm getting at.
Look, I think we believed them in them at the start of the year.
We did.
Just the way that they, the way that they're playing at the moment, like defensively, they're, you know, a lot more than solid. It's just, yeah, the questions have popped up basically for his whole career, really. But the questions are starting to be popped up again in the media about Baker Mayfield and how, you know, is extensions coming up? Do the Browns pay him? What sort of extension money is he looking at? And can he be can he be the reason that you don't lose? Not so much the reason that you win.
And that's the hard thing. I don't know. I think, is he winning just on circumstances that they have a two-headed monster running back core? And a great, second year coach, but a great coach nonetheless. So it's possible. I don't know. Like, my thing is Odell Beckham is this kind of it for him? Like, I mean,
I think the experiment in Cleveland with Odell Beckham Jr. is done, and I haven't heard that opinion around NFL circles or anything like that. But I think that not so much he's done. But I just think the sample size with him and Baker is big enough now, and he had six targets there as well. And he caught two balls, but there's at least two in this game where there's simple drops.
It's funny. I was listening to another podcast actually, and they were talking about the Browns, and he was saying, like, he was talking to his son about the Browns, and it's funny, his son still talks about the most is Odell Beckham Jr. So what I'm getting at is still has that presence and know-it-all within the actual fan base.
No, that's right. It's the name.
Is it just from that catch? This is what I'm really getting at. Is it just from that ridiculously unbelievable,
I think it was because of the one-handed catch, but also the way that he sort of elevated Eli Manning. He sort of elevated Eli Manning when he was clearly on the decline. They weren't a super successful franchise at the back end, but they had Odell Beckham Jr. They had there, and it looked whenever Eli was throwing to Odell, it was magical. And now that magic has been lost. Look, Eli's the consummate professional. And we don't know whether or not Baker is now and can be that in the future. But, you know, I think it's fairly clear at the moment. I think that they should be absolutely looking for a trade partner for OBJ.
And I don't know what he'd get. I don't know. Anything higher than the third would kind of be crazy, to be completely honest.
Whether or not they could get, I don't know, some sort of compensation back for now, you know, get a wide receiver back now, or
maybe,
you know, use the weapons that they've got there, you know, maybe make Jarvis Landry a little bit more of a long threat, even though he's sort of your better slot receiver that Cleveland's got. You know, we've said before in their three-headed monster for tight ends, you know, with Bryant and Joku and Hooper. Like, you can absolutely use those even if
I'm surprised
you lose Odell Beckham Jr. and get some draft capital back for the future.
Yeah, exactly. I thought the same thing. On the other side, the Broncos, I think this is it for them. I think they are actually done for the year. I think this is kind of between, this is Vic Fangio, the head coach for the Broncos, or probably Matt Nagy that they're going to be one of the first coaches to be fired. If I'm completely honest, after week eight, week nine, I think they drafted wrong. I'm not saying who they picked up was Pat Surtain wasn't a great pick. That's a great pick. I think you could have had a quarterback. You could have had a Mac Jones. You could have had a Justin Fields.
I think he was there. They could have had Justin Fields. Exactly. He was still there staring
them
in the face.
That's right. That's what I'm getting at. So I think them three at four, I don't see them going further. I think Vic Fangio is gone, or possibly Matt Nagy. I wish it came up on Sportsbet. I wish you can pick that because
who's the first coach to get fired?
Yeah.
I think they're definite.
Yeah. Move on to Packers beating the Washington football team 24-10. Look, after that first loss for the Packers, I mean, this was a fairly easy game, but that first loss for the Packers against your Saints, they've just shown that they are obviously Super Bowl contenders. It's glaringly obvious. And they didn't have to do much in this game, especially not in the rushing game.
They haven't skipped a beat. No, this was a less than impressive rushing display by... I guess both of their run heavy running backs in Aaron Jones and AJ Dillon. Very unimpressive in that regard. But one person who generally impresses most weeks out of not is Devontae Adams.
Well, that's right. I mean, exactly. And he got 70 TD and caught six of his seven targets, 76 yards, and that's just who you got there. And you know, after this game, Aaron did come out and say he loves this team. He loves playing with this team. This team's fun. He's actually having fun, which is, interesting for him to say considering the offseason. So it will be interesting to see if he does actually. It's quite possible he stays after this year. Quite possible.
And I think that not so much that they could still keep Jordan Love on the bench there and have that is or ship him away and get another serviceable backup quarterback, to back up Aaron Rodgers. Cause I think that's
not a bad idea.
I think that the drop off just purely on the fact that Love hasn't played, like if heaven forbid Rodgers does go down, then I think you could seriously draw a line to say that they're done if Rodgers goes down.
Of course, which is probably something that doesn't get talked about that much.
Well, we've seen Love in garbage time against the Saints, and he was ordinary. Saying that, the Saints are still a fairly good defensive side. So, I don't think he was ever going to sort of succeed even in garbage time. In that game in week one in Jacksonville. But
I just mean how much Aaron Rodgers doesn't actually get injured. It's probably something that doesn't get talked about, that he is pretty
not recently, anyway.
He's pretty he has occasional ones, but for his age, he's pretty it's not fair.
He's fairly durable. But look, durable. he can still it's not as if he's a statue in the pocket. He can still move around.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, he can move around. He can actually. You're right. He can move around pretty well. He moved around. He can still escape.
He nearly
had more yards than Aaron Jones, which is So he can move.
Yeah, exactly. I'll tell you what. Like the growing stature of Tyler Heinicke, and while they're not getting the results on the board, he had nearly 100 yards rushing in this game.
I know, but. You've got such a good running back in Antonio Gibson, and you use your other great, offensive player in Terry McLaurin, but it didn't come to fruition.
Yeah, listening, watching the broadcast of this game, McLaurin has been their leading receiver the last 3 years. He's as good a wide receiver who's out there at the moment, and they really haven't had the best of quarterback situations, but he's still a really good pass catcher. And who else really do you trust on in that receiving core there?
Well, that's, you know, that's it. I mean, it's supposed to be Curtis Samuel, but he's had COVID and injury issues, so that's, you know, that hasn't come to anything.
He is on the mend, though. He should be back in the next couple of weeks, though, right?
He should be, but, you know, what it's going to turn out to, I don't know.
Well, and that could open the playbook right up then, you know, if you've got a second threat just, rather than, you know, than somebody like an Adam Humphries or, you know, a Ricky Seals-Jones or someone like that. Like, you have a genuine second receiving threat, and that could really open everything up. And who knows when the hell Fitzpatrick's going to come back?
Well, that's what I was about. That's exactly right, because, you know, who's to say that that's where they lost their season, which is weird to say, but it's possible. I mean, they would have had the whole preseason centered around him, and then they would have had. Then you have to sort of change it to a running Taylor Heinicke. So, yeah. Well,
he had Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks on the ropes in the first week of the playoffs last year.
Yeah
on did. The ropes.
Yeah.
And it only took, you know, a miraculous comeback for them to come through. And then subsequently they sort of rumble through, you know, two and three of the greatest quarterbacks that's ever played.
Wow.
The bomb toy in the Bucks, I mean, you know, and Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees.
Of course.
So it's and then they absolutely stomp the living crap out of the, you know, out of the so-called new flavor of quarterback in Patrick Mahomes, whose offensive line was just decimated in the Super Bowl. But, you know, sort of getting away from the fact. But I just think that at Heinicke can be, you know, like we talked about in that first game, can be a Case Keenum. Yeah, in the right circumstance, can be an extremely serviceable quarterback.
Yeah,
like most of these backups can.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree on that. Next game, Tennessee. Look, I mean, we've already said at the start, there's probably not much to dwell on the Tennessee side. There's only thing to talk about is obviously Derrick Henry. He can run for 86 yards. He can throw a touchdown. The guy can do everything.
That was ridiculous. Like, he shows run. It was on the opening drive. It's on the opening drive that Tennessee had.
That's it.
And
that's balls.
When I watched it, I'm just like when you watch the play unfold and you're like, all right, he's just gonna have a nice waltz into the end zone from the 5 yard line. And as he goes, the defensive line collapses to try and, you know, shut the box down. And then he just dunks one. Yeah, he just dunks one over the top to Pruitt, and it wasn't the perfectly thrown pass either.
No.
He just dunks it over the top, and you're just like, there's nothing this guy can't do. Like, what the hell?
It's clearly a I honestly think clearly it was a drawn up play, because they probably went, they're just gonna like stack him or really pressure him. So why don't you at least give him protection and then throw the ball, and he did, and he got a touchdown.
Well, and it right, being so early drive. In the game too, and usually most teams will come out and have those first 10 to 15 plays scripted. So, you know, they're gonna adhere to these 10 to 15 plays as they open up the game. So that was obviously going to be a part of it, and I could only assume that, you know, Tennessee and their coaching staff we're thinking along the lines of, this is going to be a bit of an offensive shootout, so we better show them a little something that we've got, you know, we've got a little bit of game, we've got some tricks too, because that's just what you've had to do against the previous incarnation of Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, but they're just not showing that at the moment.
That's my next question, is like, you did
but
say
you don't want to be you don't want to be the team that goes up against the Chiefs, relaxes a little bit, and then they come out and then they blitz you. You don't want to be that team.
No, you're right. But they're 3-4 now. They're 3-4. And I'm not saying it's over.
I think the division is over. They can still make the playoffs in a wild card spot.
But what do you think? What do you just think that people are reading them now? You think it's just an off season for Mahomes?
Said it a couple of weeks ago. A lot of teams now, I think, are planning better for them. I think the willingness for Mahomes not to take what's on offer and go for the hero play, has to be sort of programmed into him a little bit, where he can be a little bit reckless. And, you know, I've sort of watched a few, like, you know, I think it's NFL Live and Get Up, and, you know, they sort of make some analysis on what Mahomes is doing and his scanning of the field. And 9 times out of 10, it's obviously it's the deep threat, but there's real viable options for him in the slot, in, you know, a dink and dunk type game where you can take those easy 5 yards, and they're trying to get the big boom or bust play, you know, 20, 25, 30 yards down the field, rather than trying to work at accumulating first downs, you know, on second and third down, and trying in that sort of regard. I think that just needs to just in this incarnation of what the Chiefs are, I think they need to change their coaching philosophy just a little bit to try and get them just to get themselves some ugly wins, try and get the season back on track, you know, reel in the big play until they can get some confidence back. Because at this point in time, like, Mahomes in the first half, an interception, a fumble lost, 5 of 9 and 49 yards. Like, you just, those statistics just jump off the page straight up. And that's just not what we all know what Mahomes can do. So it's just a fact of their O-line is ordinary at the moment. Defensively, they're just in disarray all the time. And Mahomes is turning the ball over, and that's a problem. That's a problem for any quarterback.
So this is one of my hot takes. I don't think they make the playoffs this year. Or I don't. They're $2.56 not to make the playoffs.
Until they don't, then I'll believe it.
I don't know. I think I've drawn a line in the sand. I think they can get ugly wins. I mean, look, it's hard. It was hard for me to write them off, but I don't know. Like, by the looks of it, you only need that one little injury, and, you know, from Mahomes, and everybody is reading Kelce and Hill. They have been covered so much.
No, that's right. And so, Hill was, and not Hill. Kelce was being bullied a bit in this game as well, and he didn't like it.
But that's what you got to do to win these games against them.
But that's what you have to do.
That's right.
They're dominant receivers.
I don't see, no, unless they change something in that coaching, like you said, I don't see it. I don't see them making the playoffs this year. And it's probably a hot take.
Something's going to click, and I think that they can make a late push in this game. Look,
well, they're not going to win the division, which sucks.
Oh, absolutely not. It's going to be a wild card spot. The division for them is gone.
Yeah, a lot of us is wrecking our multi, including mine, that had them in the division to win.
Absolutely,
but...
and I think the division race, unless, you know, the Chargers or even, you know, even the Raiders just completely fall off a cliff. That's a bit of a tall order for them to sort of come back and win the division. And in saying that, yes, it's only 4 losses. We know what this Kansas City Chiefs team can do and what have done in the past, but it's just hard to imagine that they can turn it around that quickly and, you know, maybe salvage a 10-win season if they can sort of really put together, you know, maybe 5 or 6 wins on the trot. It's just hard to write them off.
Well, the team I have written off is one of the teams for the next game, and that's the Dolphins losing to the Falcons. 1-6 Dolphins. I've wrote them.
The Dolphins season is over. I think it was over the minute that Tua got hurt in, what, week 3? Look, that was an interesting game, to say the least, even though those teams aren't, you know, the highest of quality, you know, even though the Falcons have looked a little bit better in the last few weeks. Miami offensively, especially in the last couple of weeks, have sort of come to life a little bit. And Tua hasn't been terrible, but, in a pod that I've sort of listened to at this, you know, or that I listen to a lot, they're calling them disaster plays. And watching, you know, extended highlights of this game, the two interceptions that Tua throw, one near the end of the second quarter,
yes.
They were on the offensive march. they were inside the red zone and just a horrible interception thrown on a pass in the end zone. I don't know what he was thinking. The second interception, while there was still, you know, while this game was still close, and he throws the second interception just on like a weird little sort of push pass. He'd been flushed out of the pocket, a little push pass, and it just goes straight to a Falcons defender, and you're like, oh my God, it just wasn't needed to be thrown. Just either take the hit or throw it away. And that's generally the problem with younger quarterbacks that are out there at the moment, is judgment on when to just throw it out of bounds. They never want to take the hit, but sometimes you've just got to eat the yards and eat the sack. That cost 7 points. And that was a cruel, cruel blow at the end of this game.
In all honesty, but I think he, you know, for what you're saying is exactly right, but I actually think he is honestly getting better. I know about you. I think he is slightly
getting
better.
He is getting better, but that Miami's defense hasn't carried over from last year. We've said it about a couple of teams this year that were sort of top five, top 10 defenses last year and have just been in total disarray this year. The Bucs are getting better defensively. No more than the last couple of weeks. They've been unbelievable. The Dolphins' defense just hasn't carried over from last year. They were in the top six or seven in turnovers created. They're just not getting those at the moment. Xavion Howard is pretty much their only sort of go-to guy to make plays defensively. Everybody else is just getting scorched. And it was not so much you feel a little bit bad for Miami, but all of these losses are being heaped on Tua. He hasn't been there for 3 weeks. These previous 2 weeks, he's been fairly well, and the offense hasn't been too bad. It's defensively is where they're getting beaten.
Well, on the other side, they finally worked out how to use Kyle Pitts, how Kyle Pitts should be. Had a monster game, but that's how they should be using this guy. You know,
absolutely.
His positioning now is where it should be. I mean, yes, this seems to be a little bit to the detriment of Calvin Ridley, but I'm sure they'll work that out. But they'll be able to work that out. Yeah, Kyle Pitts is amazing.
And look, they're lucky too. The Falcons are lucky too at the end of this game as well with that the Matt Ryan fumble. You know, I think it was inside the last 5 minutes. Didn't cost them the game. You know, they were bailed out by Younghoe Koo in the final field goal of the game as time expired. So. That was a bailout because that was a really poor fumble and loss of possession by Matt Ryan, and the Dolphins couldn't capitalize on it.
Next game was the smash fest of the Pats beating the Jets. I mean, it's 54-13, but what I found cool in this game, or weird in this game, was obviously the amount of quarterbacks that were used in this actual game. There was
I mean, everybody was getting themselves a little bit of action. Zach Wilson went down early in the second quarter to a knee injury, and they proceed to trot out Mike White, who I'd give you $100 if you would have told me that the backup quarterback for the Jets' name was Mike White, if you hadn't known that before this game.
I didn't even know that Dallas drafted him is when I looked it up. Dallas drafted him in 2018, round 5. So I've no idea who he is or was up until this game. Not that it mattered because they got obliterated.
No, it didn't. And look, the worrying thing, I guess, which there's many of for the Jets as well, is something that was brought up again that I heard throughout this week is the Jets haven't scored one single solitary point in the first quarter all season. We are now in week 7, and they cannot get anything. And like we said, like I was saying before, teams go out there and most teams do. I don't think all of them do it, but it's sort of that old school philosophy of we'll go out there and script the first 10 to 15 plays. What the hell are their first 10 to 15 plays? If they can't even get into field goal range in the first quarter.
I don't know. The coaches.
Well, they missed a field goal in the first quarter in this game, so it's really baffling what's happened there. You know, now that Zach Wilson has been hurt. Like the Jets
they picked up Flacco.
That's right. And he was on the team. They let him go. And now they've had to trade a bit of draft capital away to get Joe Flacco back there, who they could have kept on the roster in the first place. And the Jets are just being crushed in the media for why the hell didn't you have some sort of veteran presence there for Zach Wilson to start off with.
Exactly right. That's that Robert Salah. He's not too bad. I can't remember what offensive coordinator he was, so he's pretty good. But
no, he was the D coordinator at for San Francisco.
Yeah,
under Kyle Shanahan.
Look, New England were great. I think obviously the Mac Jones experiment's working. I know he got injured, but I watched up until it was a smoke fest, and then obviously I turned it out. But Mac Jones is. You know, a little bit of a steal at number 15. I think he is now.
He's performing the best out of the rookie quarterbacks that have come out before him.
I'm talking all of them, every single one. Dude, I agree. Not all just one. The number one pick, the number two pick, the number three pick, all of them. So, yeah, I agree. Can you tell me what's happening with the Carolina Panthers? Is it just that Christian McCaffrey's injured and then they can't do anything else?
Is that the? I think that's the simple. Is it that simple, right?
Well, I guess so. I mean,
Look, he's arguably the best dual threat running back that's out there at the moment, and there's quite a few of them out there. You know, in this sort of new era of the NFL, so. I think it's a fact they just don't have anything really to go to. Like, you know, as much as I'm always being critical of DJ Moore, like, but it's DJ Moore. Like, they don't have a real.
He's good. They just don't have anything else because Robbie Anderson's gone, but it literally is DJ Moore, and that's it. Who else have they got?
Exactly. It's a really sort of. I still think it's a really poor looking. Receiving core there at Carolina, and you know, once again, you know, Sam Darnold is looking like the Sam Darnold that when he was wearing green, and not Carolina blue. So
and he ended up getting
benched.
For Mr. XFL PJ Walker. So he did get benched, and yeah, I mean PJ Walker didn't have a game himself. He got sacked three times.
He got hammered too. And he just had a disaster as well. Like, you know, just 3 of 14. Like, wow. Come on. Like, does that mean that you're giving a whole lot of that means the success rate for Sam Darnold isn't going to be that well either? If your backup quarterback is looking like trash like that as well, then what chance does your starter have?
No, that's exactly right. But their defense, you know, I'm not obviously being in the division. I'm not a New York Giants fan, but their defense has always been serviceable. Like, you know, I mean, obviously starring Leonard Williams. So
as of recently, yeah. But I thought in this game, their defensive line just mauled Carolina up front.
Yeah.
Mauled them.
Well, they've got like the same.
They were getting pressure on both quarterbacks. That's one of the better games that I've seen the Giants defense in quite a while, especially with their front four and getting pressure on the quarterback. And that's what happened. And they were nice offensively in the second half as well. Like that first half of that game was pretty poo poo, but you know, pretty sloppy. I thought both teams offensively. So for the Giants to sort of wake up, I guess, in the second half and put together, you know, a couple of touchdowns, on, you know, third quarter, fourth quarter, giving what the defense gave them, Carolina's defense, you know, kicked a couple of field goals as well, in the fourth quarter just to get them the win. And looking at, you know, on either side of the score here, I'd much rather the Giants receiving core than what Carolina's is.
Oh, I guarantee, yeah, 100%. Kadarius Toney, I didn't like where they picked him at 20, but he is a pretty good player, and obviously Kenny Golladay. So, no, I agree. I definitely agree with that. Look,
Even guys at the lower end of it, you know, Darius Slayton, Dante Pettis, who's a speedster. Yeah. You know, they've got...
Yeah, that's true.
It's not a bad receiving core as a whole. Like, they don't have that genuine number one, you know, unless you want to class... You know, Kenny Golladay along that line, but that's a pretty, that's probably a very poor man's number one receiver. But as good serviceable receivers, serviceable. I think they've got them scared. Even Evan Engram, and we all forget about them.
We always forget about them.
And he hardly ever gets used.
Not in the next game, but, you know, talk about receivers and tight ends. The Bengals, are sneakily or starting to look like the real deal. Absolutely smashing the Ravens of all teams, 41-17. Their receiving core was unbelievable.
That Sunday that the NFL was on, the main day was National Tight Ends Day, and quite a few tight ends sort of got into the end zone this week. But I think that they're on a hot streak at the moment.
You think they can keep it going?
I do. And they need to capitalize on this. Look, score for score in the first half.
Yeah. But then, sometimes...
Even as the second half started, it only took, 90 seconds for, you know, that bomb by Jackson to Hollywood Brown. And that put the Ravens up 17-13. And then that was it. It was all over after that. Like, Baltimore were extremely restricted... Offensively,
and
yep. And since Cincinnati's defensive players has really stepped up, and you know, no more than Trey Hendrickson, they picked up from the Saints this year.
So, or it's funny you mentioned not even just Trey Hendrickson, like their actual defense is a lot of quote unquote rejects from other teams, but they're killing it. Von Bell, Chidobe Awuzie, Sam Hubbard, these were all discards from other teams.
Ogunjobi.
Yeah,
isn't he a region? Didn't he come from Cleveland?
They've got it's just not a bad formula. They've got
Eli Apple, Trey Flowers, they're all rejects.
So, exactly, I know.
They're both from the Giants.
I went through and looked at it. Their offense is extremely young, but their defense has all these old heads that are rejects and possibly have chips on their shoulders, and the mix is unbelievable. It's great. You're right. I've seen a few, and there is a lot of discarded NRL rejects that are actually great players. They are great players. Right. Not just Trey Hendrickson. There's a lot on there. Like Von Bell. Yeah. It's they're doing great. How can we not go past Jamar Chase? I mean, both of them, Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase, but Jamar Chase getting 200 yards, you know, is, yes, he got 82 of that in a bomb, but still. You take off still,
that's still seven catches for 120 yards. That's still pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Him and Burrow just are completely in sync. Burrow, you know, this comeback of the year award, there's a few players this could go to. It could actually be an interesting way. It's an interesting race. You got him, you got Dak Prescott. There's a few comebacks you could probably go down the list. Like Burrow's comeback from, like, you know, his knee being smashed in 2,000 places.
Just obliterated. Every ligament that he had in there.
Yeah. So they are possibly, I mean, they're technically leading the AFC at the moment. They're possibly the real deal this year, which is awesome.
They've got a kid. No, I said I won't believe it until they continue on doing it, but they've got to ride this hot streak.
God, that's a tough division. Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland, even Pittsburgh on their day. So, goddamn, that's a tough division. And they're leading. Yeah. It's not
and
odd. Look,
but, you know, and Baltimore were good in the first half. And then, you know, after that boom play in the third quarter, I thought they were really held in check by Cincinnati. It's amazing to me how open and how easily he gets open, Mark Andrews does. Like, I don't know why nobody covers him. Like, in that first half, he got all three of his catches in the first half, all three of them wide open. No, nobody within four or five arms length of him. It just it's, every time it's just like what are they doing? Like nobody wants to cover. Just it's amazing how he gets so open.
Like you mentioned tight end, like there's just a plethora of great tight ends in the league. Plethora of great tight ends.
Yeah, no, they're everywhere.
Raiders beating the Eagles 33-24. The great thing for me in this game was that for the Raiders playing above where they thought they were going to be is they won this game without Darren Waller. So they did very well without their quote unquote best target in Darren Waller.
And they plug in the backup tight end Foster Moreau, and he just carries on, carries on. Like if you put those two statistical lines next to each other and six catches for 60 yards next to Darren Waller, you'd be like, that's an average game sort of him.
Derek Carr was near perfect in this game too. 31-34.
Three incompletions. Like
yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
That tells you the story too on how sort of poorly Philadelphia's defense is at the moment as well.
Well, and the other thing is, I think we both questioned the Kenyon Drake free agency pickup by the Raiders, but that's starting to pay dividends a little bit in the last couple of games.
It is at the moment. Look, Josh Jacobs went down in this game as well, so that didn't help, and he's sort of being hindered a little bit by. Injury. I think at the start of the year he had a toe injury. I can't remember what happened to him in this game and why he went off. But they had a decent offensive game, and it was sort of weird to see Henry Ruggs with the amount of receptions that he did and only having 24 yards. Usually he's that deep threat. For the Vegas Raiders, and as you mentioned there before, Kenyon Drake has been a really nice pickup for them, and sort of picked up the slack, I guess, when Jacobs went off. Not dazzling numbers by any stretch of the imagination, and a couple of receptions as well. Yeah, three catches, but to control the clock for Vegas and the way that they go about their business at this point in time was quite impressive. And, like we said, Derek Carr, only not completing three passes out of 34, which is pretty crazy statistic. So it's a testament to how they're going. Like Marcus Mariota is back in the lineup as well. He had himself a nice little rush for 4 yards. So it's good to sort of see him back again. Like I think a lot of people were sort of high on him coming out. I think it was him and Winston, I think, were 1 and 2. Was it 2016 or 2017 draft? Obviously they haven't really lived up to the expectations, but Mariota's just fallen off the face of the planet.
Yeah. But like he it's funny you say serviceable sort of backups before we move on to the next game. He could be easily a serviceable backup for a lot of people like Zach Wilson.
He can be a starter. I think he can be a starter again in the right situation.
I'm not saying he couldn't be, but I'm saying if he's a QB2, someone like him with Zach Wilson would just be wonders. I mean, he could be a starter anywhere. He could be a starter in the Broncos. He could be a starter in a lot of places. You are right. You're exactly right there. Rams beating the Lions 28-19. Obviously this was built around the homecoming, but the first game against the two quarterbacks in their teams. They were both at for a very long time, and that's Jared Goff and Matthew Stafford.
I don't mind the coaching philosophy and the way that it was sort of executed a little bit by the Detroit Lions in, hey, let's try and dazzle the Rams with a couple of fake punts on fourth down after they scored their first touchdown. After DeAndre Swift scored that first touchdown, they went for the onside kick, got it back, didn't capitalize on it, I thought, which was a little bit disappointing. They only got the 3 points out of it, so I think that was a bit disappointing. But I just thought this was the right – this is – if it had been any other team, I would have been okay with the philosophy, but against an NFC powerhouse like this, that's not the right type of environment to go about this. Do that sort of stuff in a game that you think you might actually be able to win.
Because I was going to say, being that they came in 0-6, I'm not against it at all. No. I think they can try stuff like this.
You've got to pick and choose your teams better to do that sort of funky stuff against rather than the LA Rams.
That's true. It started off well, but then you mentioned it just then, like they didn't capitalize on it. So,
that's the thing. You do it against a lesser team. You know, you might be able to get away with that. You know, against they've got Philadelphia next. But try it against them. Do you know what I mean? Try it against someone who, you know, something like the Falcons or somebody like that. Like, why do that sort of stuff? Yeah.
That's fair.
Against, you know, an impeccable defense in what the Rams have.
Oh, exactly. Although they weren't, I mean, they did enough. The defense didn't have to do much, I guess, so to speak, for the Lions, because the Lions sort of, I guess, lost it. Well, Jared Goff sort of lost it himself personally, you know, just poor throws or poor attempts. On the other side, but the nice combination between Cooper Kupp and Stafford is alive and well. You know, Kafford. I've already put their names together. Kupp getting only 156 yards. My boy Woods getting 70 yards. Yeah, they're just he just shows you why he was a number one pick. I kept thinking this the other last couple of weeks. You know, what the hell happened and why, you know, obviously the team, but, you know, he was a number one pick for a reason, and this shows it. This absolutely shows it.
No, that's right, and he hasn't really lost a step, really. And I guess the not the same quite can be said about Jared Goff. Look, his last interception in the fourth quarter with about 5 minutes to go, it was like 4:48 to go in the fourth quarter, an absolute game killer because they're only down 6 points.
Yeah. True.
And they were well and truly doing well on offense, especially in that second half. Even though they weren't really putting the major points on the board, I thought they were a little unlucky with a few plays. But that final interception by Goff was just an absolute game killer. And then obviously he threw one, you know, trying to duck and weave his way, trying to fight back from, you know, from being 9 points in the hole. And he throws another one like, you know, really, really late. Inside the last minute, which was, you know, I guess it goes down in his resume, but, you know, it's just one of those things where he's just trying to find something, you know, to give the Lions a little bit of a spark. But, yeah, look, they're just clinical, I guess, by the Rams. They took those couple of punches in the mouth early in the first half with Detroit's tricks and still able to bear it and get the win.
Cardinals came into the game against the Texans. You know, obviously they crushed them 31-5. There's probably not much to go over in this game, but they were always going to keep their undefeated streak intact, so to speak. They were just clinical. They didn't really need to use the receiving core that much, except for the newly acquired Zach Ertz, who got three catches for 66 yards and a TD.
So. Are you aware of the term in the NFL, scoregami?
No. I mean, I could put the words together and to have a guess at what it means, but no. What is it?
Basically, that's the only thing that I've taken out of this game, besides the fact that Houston actually looked okay in the first quarter and then just subsequently just got blown off the park here thereafter. Scoregami is basically just like a really weird sort of NFL stat where they go through the history of the NFL and has this score ever been the full-time score? So we've had two scoregamis in the last 2 weeks. So the Rams, so these two scores have never been the final score ever in an NFL regular season, regular postseason game. So last week was the Rams 38. New York Giants 11. That score has never in the history of the NFL been a final score. So that's what they sort of, that's what scoregami means. So this week it was this game.
So in other words,
31-5 has never been a full-time score in the NFL before.
So what you're saying is if you're a betting person, which I'm not, but if you're a betting person,
you're not.
You're saying
that's just a flat faced lie.
So you're getting off my point. No, that was the point. No, what you're basically saying to me is that pick the score. Is it too easy then? In NFL, it kind of is if you sort of think about it. Is it easy?
I mean,
it's not hard.
Not really. It's just scores that have never been a final score. Like that's, you know, if you look it up, yeah, you look up NFL scorigami, and it will get. I'm pretty sure that there's like I haven't looked it up, but there's I've heard that there's a table of all the scores that have never been, never been NFL full time scores.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I'm not going to go on Sportsbet and check out that. So, although I'm on there right now,
I seriously doubt that they would have anything to do with Scorigami and Sportsbet.
No. I mean, I'll have the two websites side by side, so then I can put a bet on.
Those scores would be astronomical.
Well, exactly. The Bucks, dude. This feels like a weird. You know, it's now you mentioned it's in my head. This feels like a weird score. But I could see it could happen when you add it up. 38-3.
It's usually those. It's just those odd scores where there's been a safety.
Yeah.
Especially when they're low, like 11 points is a really strange score. 5 points is a really strange score.
Yeah. Exactly. No, that's fair.
4 points. Do you know what I mean? Four points is a really strange score.
Good point. Yeah. No, that is a great point, actually. Yeah, that's definitely fair. Look, this is just Tom Brady. Getting his 600th TD. This is Chicago Bears flat out don't know where they are or what they're doing.
That was a brutal game. If you're a Bears fan, that was just a brutal game to watch. Like the Bucks defense just creamed Justin Fields. 2 fumbles, 3 interceptions, 5 turnovers on your resume in one game.
Just a poor guy. I mean, I don't know what else to say, but poor guy.
They're killing him before his career even starts.
They are literally killing him. I don't know. That's what I think Matt Nagy has to be up there as one of the coaches that have to go soon because.
So that, or they just got to take the play calling away from him.
Look, you're right. Look on the other. Look, the Bucks did what the Bucks do. You know, have as many receptions people as you need to throw to, you know, share the love around. Mike Evans is his red zone target for a reason, always seems to happen.
No, three TDs for Evans is not really sharing the love around, but receptions wise, then Brady was sort of getting, you know, a lot of different people involved. But
which he always does.
Which he generally does, but I can see OJ Howard and Cameron Brate sort of being pushed into the background a little bit since you're getting the whisper that Gronk is very much trending and being back next week. So those share targets will drastically decrease and Gronk's will be right up again.
I'm assuming we'll talk about the Brady's 600th touchdown post touchdown. Celebration/gaffe in Dud of the Week.
Yes, more? That's correct.
Okay, beautiful. I thought so because it's the same. We both got the same on that.
You've heard my rant on it, so
I can't wait for everyone to hear it. Look, the Colts. What do you think of the Colts? It was a good win by them. What do you honestly think of the Colts?
I think their defense is getting more and more impressive as the weeks go on.
As they've always had.
And that is exactly what they needed because if they can get a healthy T.Y. Hilton back, obviously Michael Pittman is going forward in leaps and bounds. Yes. We know what Jonathan Taylor is an amazing running back.
Yes.
If they can string together, a two-headed combination of Pittman and T.Y. Hilton, have good running lanes for Jonathan Taylor and Nyheim Hines as well. He's a better pass catcher rather than sort of your traditional heavy running back. Look, they're offensively, they keep Carson Wentz clean, which has always been, I guess, sort of the part of the, not, I wouldn't say the problem, but part of what makes him successful is to keep him clean. Look, he can still roll out and make some really good throws. This game was a bit more difficult just purely because of the driving rain they were playing in Santa Clara on the Sunday night feature game.
Yeah.
That was just one of those gritty type games that you're happy to go into the opposing team's arena and come away with a win.
I mean, that's exactly what they did. It's a perfect way of putting it, because that's exactly what they did.
Elijah Mitchell, super impressive for San Francisco. Again, when he's healthy, he's good.
It's possibly, you know, for considering he was the second taken RB for the 49ers, it's possibly he's going to end the year and start next year as the RB1, because I'd be very surprised if Mostert comes back, and I don't know what they're doing with Trey Sermon.
Mostert lasted, what, 3 plays this year in the opening game, and then that was it.
And everyone caught it.
They also got Jamichael Hasty there as well, who's sort of been in and out of this lineup as a running back as well, and he hasn't done a whole lot at all. It's been sort of just the next man up in regards to running backs there in San Francisco, and it's once again it's Jimmy G, and I guess they need to find that number two receiver there. Like, they obviously don't have George Kittle at the moment, who's been out for most of this year, so they haven't got that good safety valve receiving for Jimmy G. But Deebo Samuel keeps getting his.
Mm. Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, he does.
Brandon Ayuk he's just fallen off the face of the planet.
Wow, my God. Yeah,
it's unreal.
And you know, the other thing of all this is did we put Shanahan too high in the coaching ranks? Because I was looking, I did a little bit of deep dive. He is, you know, for everyone that goes on and raves about how great Shanahan is, the dude is still, when you add it all up, is not over
40. 500 as a head coach.
No, he's not over 400. If he wins this week,
I thought I heard something this week. He's like 31-37 or something like that.
If he wins this week, it'll put him over 40. Just to put in perspective of where he is. So is that, that's what I mean. Are we like, I don't know. It's just interesting when I read that stat, I went, okay. Everyone loves Shanahan and talks him up like he's, you know, not God's gift, but just, you know, how good he is. And
offensive genius. That's what you hear.
Offensive
genius, you know, in the realms of, you know, not to toot the horn, but you know, of Sean Payton.
No. You can throw it away. Yeah, I agree. Sean Payton's the one I would have said as well. So, I think they're in the toughest division out of all the divisions. And I think, you know, they're not even going to get a wild card spot. You know, they're not going to beat Arizona. They're not going to beat Los Angeles.
They haven't won at home this year.
Yeah. Yep.
Like that's. And I love to say, you know, home, like Santa Clara, which they go, oh, it's only an hour's drive from the city limits of San Francisco. Oh, only an hour's drive. So that's great. So you think of an hour's drive from where you live and an hour's drive from where I live. You think you're traveling to Ingham? Are you traveling to Ayr? Like that's an hour's drive for you. Yeah, you'd be almost at Proserpine. You'd be. Do you know what I mean? You're on the other side of Serena, an hour's drive. Oh, yeah, of course. You just expect all your home fans from San Francisco to drive an hour down to Santa Clara to watch home games. Like, that's ridiculous.
That's a great point, actually. That there is that you can't expect your fans to drive. No, that's
they do.
Of course they do, but, you know, not.
It's crazy with that sort of stuff. But just the way the commentators, you know, Collinsworth and Al Michaels on Sunday night, yeah, they're just, it's just so flippant. Oh, yeah, it's only an hour's drive south of San Francisco. Oh, only an hour's drive.
And they literally ran into a storm, not obviously on the field and then the weather. So
no, that's right.
Oh, my God. Stay in the NFC West. The last game was the, you know, the team that will stay down the bottom, the Seahawks losing to the Saints 13-10. Terrible game. This was an ugly game.
Oh, this was an icky game.
Except for Alvin Kamara. Alvin Kamara had a game.
Look, yeah, he does that because, you know, AK-41's the man, and you'll never change my mind on that.
No.
The scary sort of statistic on this game for me, not so much scary, but okay, so DK Metcalf, 2 receptions, 96 yards. 84 of them on one play for the touchdown.
Huh?
Okay, so in the first quarter, this game wasn't about the jerseys. This game wasn't about a Seahawk, you know, the Seahawks versus New Orleans. This game was about Marshawn Lattimore versus DK Metcalf, because that was as feisty as a, you know, as a corner versus a wide receiver game that I've seen in a long time. And Marshawn Lattimore was not having any of it, and he got penalized. I'd say he got penalized 90% of the time, and 90% of the time it was instigated by DK Metcalf pushing off, pushing him in the face. What the F were the referees looking at when this was going on, and all they see is the retaliation by Marshawn Lattimore? Like,
well, that's
give
what
me
I was
a
about
break.
To say. That's what I was about to say. That's
as if a corner or a safety or a linebacker's job isn't hard enough as it is, and then you got to put up with that bullshit.
Unfortunately, that's a little bit of a detriment to Marshawn Lattimore. Is that he has that sort
he
of
he couldn't help himself.
That's what I mean. Help a little himself. Bit detriment to him. Now you're right. He's a great player, but he has that in him, and he doesn't have to sort of. Or carry on, but they both got fined in this, didn't they, for the scuffles?
They both got hit with fines,
in the point that you were right, that it was more DK Metcalf, is he got fined $4,000 more than Marshawn Lattimore. So
exactly. Like it was clear and obvious, and they've got two really aggressive corners, you know, and also they got CJ Gardner-Johnson as well, who's one of the more aggressive, safeties. Slash, you know, cornerbacks that the Saints have got as well. He got penalized a few times as well, trying to guard Tyler Lockett. And it was funny that after that 84-yard bomb, Metcalf didn't get targeted until the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Now, is that a cover? Was that because of the coverage, or was that just because of what the plays are being called? Because if you're having such success. And the only reason that Metcalf got that touchdown anyways, they were jostling for position and Lattimore fell down.
That's
the only reason he got that big bomb.
And I'm not going to go on any side here, because I agree with you that, you know, they missed a lot of what DK was doing, but they were both jawing and grabbing at each other's face the whole game. So,
but what are they? You can't just take a backward step.
I know you can't. No, you can't. You can't. You know, regardless of how jacked and 0.5% body fat DK Metcalf is.
No, exactly. DK, he's a monster.
He would never take a back step to anybody.
No way.
So, you're right. Look, irregardless of that, this game was it became unwatchable towards the end.
I mean, the only reason I was James still watching Richard, is because of A, tipping, and B, because, you know, obviously I follow the Saints, so I was watching that. The point I was sort of getting at before was, it was Metcalf slash the offense had 84 yards on that first completed pass by Geno Smith. His next 11 completions were for 83 yards.
Yeah.
So it was just, it was the Kamara show, really. Like, Winston wasn't that great, but, you know, geez, he had a really good sort of safety valve in Kamara to sort of get those receptions.
They need to go to that dance. They haven't done that enough this year.
No, they haven't. This is the most that AK has carried the ball in his NFL career to this point of the season.
They need to use anymore, and I can tell you they haven't, purely because I have him in a lot of leagues, and a lot of leagues he's letting me down. So,
and look, and that it's going to be helped out with, you know, fairly soon as well. With next week, the Saints have picked up Mark Ingram from the Texans. So you know, Boom and Zoom is back. Even though Mark Ingram's what 31, and you know, he spent the last sort of, I guess, two and a bit years,
but
you know, in sort of, you know, in limbo. So whether or not he can sort of recapture any sort of resemblance of what he was a couple of years ago, but I think he knows the team, he knows the offense. I think this will be a seamless fit back to the Saints.
And if you know, if the Ravens, the way the Ravens have played, have shown any which way, it doesn't make a difference who's there. Next man up, it's fine.
No, that's right. And you know, Ingram's a reliable running back. You know, he's been, when he's been used correctly in Houston, he's been fairly serviceable. So he will definitely be used correctly in New Orleans.
Yeah, out of the three that they have there, he's the one that I wouldn't have let go personally. But anyway,
no, absolutely not.
So that was all the games. Start of the week, I guess if I'll start, the start of the week was for me was the Bengals in a hole, but you know, just Ja'Marr Chase just showing why I think he'll personally, I think he'll be the offensive player of the year. There's probably a few candidates in offensive player of the year, but I think it will
offensive
be
offensive rookie of the year.
Rookie of the year. Yeah, my bad.
I think he's a shoe-in for that at this point in time. So yeah, look, it's hard to make a case for. Not for anyone else, but, you know, he is absolutely head and shoulders above most of the other offensive rookies around.
Especially
and
while the team's winning. So.
If this man continues the way that he's going at the moment, my start of the week, Kyle Pitts.
Well, that's the other one. Yeah, no, of course. Yeah, he's
because
the other one.
Because he's starting to look like now the Kyle Pitts in an Atlanta jersey is starting to look like the Kyle Pitts in a Florida Gators jersey. Because he was just absolutely dominant with Kyle Trask as his quarterback at the Gators, and he has had two sensational weeks. He's been getting better over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and if he continues on, that's a really scary sort of offense. If Matt Ryan can keep going the way that he is with Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts, like that's two real good go to guys for him.
Yeah, and this is exactly why they took him fourth, and he's everything that he is. The dud of the week, we both have the same, so go right into it.
I mean, the Tampa Bay Bucks, them as an organization, not as in, you know, the Tampa Bay Bucks themselves, but them as an organization.
Say that properly, yes.
Yeah, them as an organization. Okay, so the situation was, we talked about it there before, the 600th touchdown was thrown by Tom Brady. Mike Evans always goes over and gives it to somebody in the crowd. Clearly, he was oblivious to the fact that that was the 600th touchdown pass by Tom Brady. He was sitting on the bench and somebody had sort of come up to him and asked where the ball was. You could see him mouth, you know, without, you know, you're reading his lips going, oh, I gave that away. So a PR person from the Bucks has gone over to the bloke in the crowd, bargained his way for him to giving up the ball. Now, I've heard a few numbers being thrown out there on what this ball could actually be worth, between $250,000 and $300,000.
So they actually got
there was many conflicting stories out there about what this guy was offered and what he got.
Before you get into that, it was actually like the most actual value I seen, $500,000. I buy a proper valuation. But yeah, go ahead and tell them what his first offer was.
His first offer was basically a plate of nachos. it wasn't a plate of nachos. It might as well been. The offer they gave him was a Brady, another ball, so, you know, $100 worth, if that, and a Brady signed jersey.
But the Brady didn't sign the ball.
Like, get the F out of here. And then it came out that, it's going to be a Brady signed jersey, and then a Mike Evans signed jersey, and some signed cleats, and then $1,000 at the store, and then blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, oh, they're just digging themselves into a hole even more. Like, just, yeah, tickets tickets for the rest of this year and next year. Like, this guy's a really, really poor negotiator. For me, especially when the value would come out, and this would be nothing for the Bucks organization. You give me two season tickets, and this might be a little bit too much, but you can only ask. You give me two season tickets for the rest of my life in that stadium.
I think
for
if
the
you
rest
add it,
of my life.
I think if you add it up, I think that's probably $500,000 worth. So I don't think that's an issue at all. No, I
don't think so either.
I think it was both. I think it was terrible by the organization, but my dad also was towards the guy. I was just, look, he's being nice and all, but still negotiate. And a lot of people said
exactly.
It. Negotiate
I've still got
better.
The, you don't give it. I've still got the ball here. Here, you want it? You want it? Yeah, you want it? Woo, come and get it. Yeah.
A lot of people said, you
I
know,
I will meet Tom Brady in person in an undisclosed cafe in Tampa Bay, and him and I will discuss what he wants for this game.
He did say he wanted to have a round of golf with Tom, and Tom didn't even accept that, so which would have been nothing.
The thing that sort of that gave it a little bit of credibility, and not much, but a little bit, was Tom Brady said he was going to come out and give him something nice. And something nice was one Bitcoin.
Ah, so anything, I would ask.
Of course, Tom Brady has got Bitcoin. Of course he does.
Yeah, of course he does. One Bitcoin is probably, well, it's not like half a million.
No, it's not half. It's like, I think when it was like 55,000 US.
Yeah.
So you come back to the negotiating table and you go, how about we go three Bitcoin?
And Giselle. In your suite.
Or your season tickets for the rest of the year and next year in the Tom Brady suite.
It should have been. That's what I thought it was going to be because, you know, well, I mean, that's probably a bit thing, but in any suite, doesn't have to be Tom Brady's, any suite.
Oh, it doesn't even have to. That's what I mean. Maybe for this year and next year while Tom is still playing. But even after that, it would be like, I want two season tickets right here in this end zone, in this front row for the rest of my natural life.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Poor negotiation skills. Half a million down the tube.
But that's the first thing that popped into my head. Like, as they say, I'll give you the ball back. And I mean, that's the not even just for the rest of the year or two. That's the first thing that popped into my head. I want season ticket here. I want season tickets here in this very seat forever.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree.
And that's nothing for them. That's two seats out of
65,000
or 70,000. That's nothing.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. It's exactly how I thought. That's exactly why we both picked it as a dud of the week. One more thing before we finish.
I think, and just speaking of Tom Brady, I think he's coming. I think he's coming for Peyton Manning's 55 touchdowns in a season. Tom Brady's thrown 21 already. And it's only week 7.
Tom Brady's
coming for that record.
You know, I've said this, we won't dive into it this week because we're running out of time, but Tom Brady is still second on MVP race at $5.50. Tom Brady is he not the first? Really? Is he not the first? I know who the first is, and that's Kyler Murray. But is
Kyler
he not
Murray,
the first?
I think for me as well, I think it's Justin Herbert. And it's Tom Brady and it's Derrick Henry.
Wow. $23. That's so juicy to pick. I'm squeamish over that. I mean, what's name's up there too? Mr. Oh my God. I've already lost his name from the Bills, the quarterback.
Oh, Josh Allen's still there. Well. And look, I think a sneaky one as well is Matt Stafford.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's fair. But I just don't know why he's second favorite. He probably should be favorite is what I'm getting at.
Then that just depends on how much money's being put on.
Well,
That could change.
That's true. So Josh Allen's, that's changed. Josh Allen's favorite of $4, then Dak and Tom are $6. Ooh, and after Kyler's loss, he's gone right down to $6.50. Interesting. Even a sneaky Rodgers at $10, a back-to-back. I don't know.
I mean, and yeah, there's another one. That's definitely another possibility since, what he's done. Since they had the stinker in week one. He's been unreal, Rodgers.
Mahomes has pushed out to $51, so there you go.
Oh, look, and then look, he's having a phenomenal year as well, except for the turnovers.
I don't know if they won every game now and you just put it on. They'd have to win every game.
Hasn't Mahomes thrown 18? Isn't he second? He's thrown 18, 19 touchdowns?
Yeah, but he's also gone over his interception rate for two seasons in games. So that's probably why.
Himself, with fumbles lost and interceptions.
Exactly.
He's had 11 turnovers this year.
As they like in the MVP race, you have to be on a winning team, basically, and he's not on a winning team.
Not at the moment.
Look,
JJ Watt being done for the season as well is going to hurt Carolina. He finished off that game this week. I was very close to giving him my stud of the week.
Yeah.
Torn labrum, bicep, rotator cuff, just everything to do with your shoulder.
And he finished the game. Yeah, unbelievable.
What a beast.
Yeah. That will do it, I guess, for this week's NFL Week 7. Don't forget our socials, as always. Twitter at Final Play Pod, Facebook Final Play Podcast. Take it away with all the trading card extravaganza.
Trading card extravaganza. You've got Eureka Sports Cards on Facebook, and then gimco.com.au.
I just noticed WWE signed a deal with Panini.
I know, brutal.
I know, just recently.
Brutal.
Because they just think Panini has more of a reach internationally, which is possibly true. I don't know, but that's what they've signed it for, is one of the caveats of it.
And Topps were starting to bring out some really nice stuff with WWE in the last couple of years. Topps Chrome, Topps Finest. This year, Topps Chrome has just dropped in the last couple of weeks. I don't think it's as impressive as last year's product, but... this year the Topps Chrome they're still commanding like Australian over $220, $230 a box. It's still, while relatively cheap for the product it is, because I love Topps Chrome, but also Topps, they did Undisputed, which is a more higher end card. So I don't know what Panini is going to offer in regards to that, just killer, because Panini's just got the absolute, market caught on everything. They've just got the monopoly on most things, and to see Topps lose WWE, which I think was a big part of what they're doing at the moment, along with baseball, really sucks.
Once I read that, I think it looked, because there's a new player in the market apparently, and this is why they're all sort of trying to sign up. There's another player of card. I don't know. Because once I read that, there's a new player coming out in terms of cards, and that's why it's driving the card value up in terms of who you're signing with.
I know that Ben Simmons and LeBron James have got exclusive deals with Upper Deck. They're the only ones that they signed for.
Yeah.
So Upper Deck is still around, but they don't do the amount of products as the other Topps and definitely Panini. Panini just floods the market with everything. So it dilutes the product. So, which I don't really like, but. Yeah, that's it is what it is, and a big coup for them in getting the WWE.
Yep, definitely. Well, my name's Jason. Negotiate better, Smith, because goddamn, negotiate better, you idiot. $500,000 down the tubes. I don't care what anyone says. $500,000 gone.
Bucks a rip off Kings plum.
It's the guys just as much as the Bucks. The guys should have also thought about it.
He had too many beers at the tailgate before he went into the game. I don't know.
At the tailgate.
Wouldn't that make you a little bit more boisterous and go, you should give me 4 tickets for the rest of the year some barbecue.
That'll do me. Have a good week, everyone. Tailgate. I love it.
Oh, so got to do a tailgate.
See ya.
See ya.